Good? Okay, thank you. Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Senator Bach, are you, do you want to get, go ahead?
It goes so fast.
If you'd like to, you're on.
58 is an hour.
Otherwise, I'll do my bill.
About 400 acres tillable.
Senator Bach has Senate File 909, and it doesn't really have an appropriation in it, so maybe you can explain.
I'm not sure why
it's here.
Here, actually.
We're kind of wondering that, too.
The fact that there was some signs that had to be erected.
Apparently.
Sure, there's really two provisions in the bill. One changes the name of the North Shore Snowmobile Trail to the C.J. Ramstead Memorial Trail. C.J. Ramstead was a very, very well-recognized, often referred to as the Dean of Snowmobile. He started up the Snowmobile magazine that you see here in Minnesota and was recognized around the country as really kind of the face of snowmobiling in the publications industry, and people in the snowmobiling community feel that changing the name of the Ramstead Trail will bring a lot of positive recognition across the country to people that are that come to Minnesota to snowmobile. The other piece of the bill is relative to the Willard Munger Trail. There currently are two sections of the trail that run parallel.
That wasn't a dynasty.
They're both named the Munger Trail. One of them is a snowmobile portion, and the other portion is a hard service portion for bike and roller.
That wasn't adopted.
In the committee, do you have an engrossed?
No, Ms.
Committee engrossed.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, that was offered by Senator Frederickson, and then after some discussion, was withdrawn by Senator Frederickson in committee, so that amendment was never adopted to the bill.
I should talk about a piece that's not in here, though. But there is, I mean, the department actually wanted that. There is apparently quite a bit of confusion on the Munger Trail where they run parallel to each other, some miles apart, that both named the Munger Trail, and they thought it would be better to change the name name of it back to what it originally was. I don't have it here, but Minnesota-Wisconsin border something. But anyway, it's not in the bill, so it's nothing to talk about. But it was something the department wanted to get done on this bill, and Senator Chaudhry was a little reluctant. I think probably didn't know enough about it at the time, but not much point in talking about it unless somebody has an amendment.
Senator Saxhag.
Well, Madam Chair, if it doesn't seem that we have a lot of discussion or changes to make, so I move that Senate File 909 be passed and sent to the floor.
Senator Bach, is this, I think there was, this will be non-state funds was where the cost, all the costs will come from. They're going to raise the money.
Any cost to put the signs up would come out of the Natural Resources Fund, the snowmobile account.
Well, it doesn't say that in here. We thought, we were trying to remember from committee, Environment Committee, if there was some kind of, somebody was going to donate some money or something, because otherwise, we need to specify if it's going to come from a fund, and it certainly would be eligible for a dedicated fund. This is a snowmobile trail, so.
Madam Chair, line 2.7 says non-state funds sufficient to pay the costs related to designing, signing, and maintaining signs. So I don't know if MnUSA is here. They must have some plan in mind to do this. They were at the Environment Policy Committee hearing, but.
Yeah.
It does say non-state funds.
So, I mean, if we send you on your way with this language, you're not going to be getting any state funds, just so you know.
Get any.
I just want to make sure.
I'm assuming the advocates of this must have that portion of it figured out.
Is there anyone here from the DNR who has a? No. Okay.
Probably all up in the home.
Well, let's just hope we did our work well in the policy committee.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm gonna get some answers.
Just
some of that before I go to the floor with this.
Well, if you want to hold on to it, we could lay it over till Thursday and just make sure, because otherwise we should put it in our bill if you need to fund it through a DNR fund. I mean, we could just wait a day, make sure.
I mean, if the committee has time, that's fine. I don't know what your agenda is, but.
Oh, well, it's kind of a simple matter. Maybe Mr. Lacismo knows about snowmobile trails.
Madam Chair, would you rather have me have Senate File 909 laid aside and for possible inclusion, or what?
Maybe we should just do that, and then on Thursday, if it turns out this is good to go, we'll just send it out on its way on its own, because then it won't need to be in our bill. So why don't you want to change your motion to that? All right. I think that's a plan. So Senator Saxhog moves that Senate File 909 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 909? If there's no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. You're welcome. I think Senator Schneid was here first. This is going to take a long time. Was she here first?
Yeah.
All right, I guess we'll take you next, Senator Scheid. You were here next. If you're ready to go.
I can do my bill. Pardon me?
I can do my bill later.
Oh.
Sorry to those from the state agency who are waiting for mine. Since you aren't on the committee, nor is Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, Senate File 225.
Welcome to the committee.
This bill has been on a journey, and you should be looking at the fourth engrossment.
Yes. Thank you. And we have a fiscal note coming around.
Change your mind.
We've been in health. We've been in environment.
I'm so upset. I could just go
anywhere. Are we ready?
Business, industry, and jobs, and no.
And then we started moving.
This bill sets up kind of the beginning, if you will, of a structure and a process for determining, specifically in this bill, children's products, hazardous chemicals, toxic chemicals in children's products. Rather than dealing with one chemical at a time and asking each other to make decisions about best made by scientists. Yeah. We've all been there.
Thank you.
To have a process that's, like I say, controlled, run by scientists. This bill tells the Department of Health and the Food and Control Agency to collaborate on developing a process to determine chemicals that are defined as either chemicals of high concern or priority chemicals. And those are defined in the definition section. And what I do have an A14 amendment.
We don't have it yet.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And Ellen has worked really hard to. Is there one coming?
I believe there is.
Okay. let me then tell you what is in here. The definitions. Chemical of high concern on page 1, line 17, and we're talking about children's products. That's on page 2, line 4. We have added green chemistry to the bill. That's on page 2, line 10 and 11, and then priority chemical is on line 18 of that page. Section 2 is. I have some concerns about it, but I think I'd like to get some wisdom from the committee. And I had originally thought I would delete this section because it's so prescriptive, but and I still think some of that language in the beginning of the section, like Aaron's, well, probably A and B, mostly B, I think need to be looked at. But this asks the Department of Health to establish a site, well, on their website, a list of chemicals of high concern. And we have already taught, you know, they're defined up above there, actually, in Article 1. And it has to do with children's products here at this point still.
Okay.
Then Section 3, I get worried, yes, I'm in the 14 Grossman, talks about what would constitute, you know, when they could designate a chemical of high concern as a priority chemical. And that's obviously, I mean, line 34 on page 3, the chemical's been found through biomonitoring to be present in human blood, et cetera. And also then that list continues with it's been found through sampling and analysis to be present in household dust, indoor air, present in fish, wildlife, and the natural environment, high production volume, et cetera. Then, because the original bill did go through more of setting up the process, we're down now to just kind of a framework for the process. We have in the applicability section, it's really not applicability. These are the all of the entities to which this does not apply. And we used to have manufacturers having to tell us that they were using a certain chemical that had been identified as a chemical of high concern, and then they would have to report that and tell us if they had a safer alternative. And if they didn't, why not? None of that is in here. I think at some point we'll get to that. But this just so this section says what is not applied, does not apply to.
And
Section 5, obviously the donations then. Section 6, there is an interstate chemicals clearinghouse, I understand. Excuse me. And we're asking that Minnesota, well, actually, this says the agency, which means the pollution control agency. By the way, where it says department, it means Department of Health, and where it says agency, it means PCA. And finally, we ask for reports from the department and the agency by January of next year. And this, I do have, well, in the amended language, We don't have it quite yet. We do.
Yay! Good timing.
My granddaughter would go. Yay. So.
Do you want to go through the amendment, Senator Scheid? Or do you want to read it first?
there's a lot of technical terminology here, but I want to add some other things back in, and I really appreciate counsel's work on this, because this was, I don't think you had this much before 5 o'clock, or maybe since it's after 5 o'clock. So let's see. Probably the most significant part of this amendment is in the second half of the first page, page 5. Excuse me. It has to do with the report by the Pollution Control Agency back to us. So there comes a time you should probably clean out your folder of all your other engrossments, but I haven't done that yet. So, yes. And this would replace then the report language on page 5, line 21, parents B. This would be a new parents B, and it would ask the PCA. On page 5 of the bill.
5, line 21, delete the paragraph that's in there and insert the new language, correct? Okay.
So that you. We're just deleting what the current bill asked from the PCA in terms of a report, and It's longer, as you can see. It goes all the way over to page 2 of the amendment. And it does include some language asking the agency, which is the PCA, to consult with stakeholders, including representatives of state agencies, manufacturers of children's products, chemical manufacturers, public health experts, and public interest groups. So that it says may consult, doesn't set up any kind of a task force or advisory board, but it allows consulting to happen. And I participated last Wednesday on an event at the Humphrey Center where it was the kind of group that I think going forward the agency and the Department of Health would consult with. It was represented by people who were there representing each of these entities. State agencies, and interest groups. There were people who, I don't know if there were chemical manufacturers there, public health experts, and people who do manufacture, arguably children's products, but manufacture a variety of kinds of products, some of which may be children's. But it was the kind of group that is just getting underway and deciding how they're going to go forward. And I think that's kind of entity that I'd want our department and our PCA to be participating in and or consulting with. I guess they're kind of the same thing. They so then I would like to add something back into Bill, but maybe you want to ask some questions. Well, I figure out exactly how maybe Ms. Schuler would like to speak to that, and then I'm just going to make sure I have a couple technical things that I want to do.
All right, thank you. Welcome, Ms. Schuler.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Kathleen Schuler. I work for the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy, and I'm also the co-director of Healthy Legacy, which is a statewide public health coalition dedicated to safe products made safely. The reason we're working on this issue is toxic chemicals in everyday consumer products is a public health issue. And the focus is on prevention. We've had single chemical bills, which are important. It's very important when we have something that's exposing children. But this provides a framework for looking at all chemicals in children's products. And the original bill was very extensive. It included reporting by industries. It included the ability to actually regulate the chemicals. The bill as it is now is basically generating two lists. The first list is chemicals of high concern. So those are chemicals that are persistent, that are bioaccumulative, chemicals that are known to be toxic, whether we have animal studies or human studies, and then also generating a list of priority chemicals. So from the big list, which is roughly 1,500 chemicals based on what other states have put together, Maine and Washington have already generated similar lists. The second list would be a subset, so it would just be the chemicals that are high concern that are also found in the environment, that are found in the human body, and originally would have been found in children's products, but we took that out of the bill because the health department doesn't really have information on what's in children's products. So the bill as it is now would be the very beginning of trying to examine these issues, calling for both agencies to report back on how we might address some of these chemicals in the future. And it also is a way of moving toward green chemistry, because as we move to safer chemicals, we can move toward a green economy, move businesses in that direction, and protect public health and the environment at the same time. Thank you.
Okay. And Senator Scheid, I'm trying to sort of catch on here a bit at a time. So there's two different lists. One is chemicals of high concern. Is that what they're called?
Section
that's the
two,
one that's 1,500. And that does that list already exist?
There are a couple.
Schuler?
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. You go.
Do you know how many are on it? It must exist somewhere.
Madam Chair, Maine and Washington have generated lists of chemicals of high concern. They haven't been published yet, but it's roughly 1,500 to 1,800 chemicals. The second list, the list that's found in the human body and the environment and children's products, is between 50 and 80 chemicals, and our agencies would be able to have access to those lists once they're published. So they could choose to use them, or they could look at the information themselves and use the Interstate Chemicals Clearinghouse to generate the list.
Okay, so we're going to use national data for both of these, not necessarily Minnesota-specific data about what's been found in the environment in Minnesota.
Because there's reliable scientific information about chemicals that exists in other places, obviously other than in Minnesota. And at one point, I think that someone from the agency did tell me that they know where to look. They know that these lists are out there. My concern is that it does say the department shall consider, this is on, I'm sorry, page 2, line 29, the department shall consider, among others, chemicals listed in the following sources. I think you could develop an argument that they would have to look at every chemical on every one of these lists. And I don't, we're talking, I think, thousands. And I'm not sure that we want them to look at every one of these. And I'm sure that many are repeated in other places. I'm just concerned about that. I want them to be able to look at these. I don't know that they need us to tell them they have to look at every chemical on every list.
Well, Senator Scheid, I'm guessing this is probably the last committee for your bill. So if we need to fix it, we need to fix it now.
Well, Madam Chair, I need your help with that.
I wonder if it would...
You have a thought about that.
Should we say they may consider? I don't know if that is weakening it too much, in your opinion, but rather than shall consider.
Madam Chair, I think may goes a long way. I mean, I want them to...
On line 2.29... So that they would have the discretion about which list to consider? Does that help, do you think?
Yeah, sure. I think so.
Okay. Maybe we should incorporate that into the A14 amendment. Senator, okay, page 2, line 29, change shall to may. Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Might it be better to have the department at least examine one of the lists, uh-huh, and may examine other lists. But if you say may to all of them, then they don't have to examine any.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid. We go to page 3, lines 3.31, identification of priority chemicals. The Department of Health may designate a chemical of high concern as a priority chemical if the department finds. I brought this up the last time we had this in front of an environment meeting, and I just want to understand this for sure. Are you saying that if the chemical meets any one of the five listed items there, it is on the list?
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, if they may designate the chemical, a chemical of high concern.
But what you,
they may designate that chemical of high concern as a priority chemical, if they find. But it does say may.
But just any one of those, like for example, the first one, any chemical that you can find anywhere in the human body, looks like it could be put on the list.
If you find the presence
But the thing is that our analysis ability is so good that we can find almost everything somewhere.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, it's about chemicals of high concern, which is defined on page 1. So it's saying they may designate a chemical of high concern as a priority chemical. So the designation is to be a priority. We already know that high concern can harm the normal development of a fetus or child, can cause cancer, genetic damage, or reproductive harm, disrupt the endocrine or hormone system, damage the nervous system, etc., be persistent, bioaccumulative, and toxic. That's what constitutes a chemical of high concern. So it has to do that. It can't just be any run-of-the-mill chemical that's found in our system.
I can answer.
But perhaps.
Could.
Madam, if I might, Madam Chair, Senator Dill, for the priority chemicals, there's information that the Pollution Control Agency has about which chemicals are found in our environment. And the Centers for Disease Control does an annual biomonitoring, not annual, but periodic biomonitoring study, and they test for numerous chemicals. And so, obviously, it would only be chemicals that are being tested for. So it's not the whole universe of chemicals. It's the list of chemicals of high concern, and then those 1,500, how many are actually then found in the environment in the human body? And it is or, it's not and.
Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, Senator Shied, who is supporting this bill?
Madam Chair.
It's a farmer.
Senator Shied.
Madam Chair, a number of organizations, Ms. Shuler can name them for you. I'd probably.
Madam Chair, Senator Dill, the Healthy Legacy Coalition is a coalition of 31 groups. It has broad membership. We have the Minnesota Public Health Association, the Minnesota Nurses Association, the Learning Disability Association, our Greater Twin Cities, the Minnesota Council of Churches, the League of Women Voters. It's a pretty long list of groups concerned about public health.
Senator Dill, perhaps we can ask if there's anyone who wants to speak against the bill. Go ahead. You have a question?
Okay, Madam Chair, Senator Shied. Okay, that's a nice list, but how does the Minnesota Department of Health feel about it, or the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, or who's on the opposing list at this point in time?
Senator Shied.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know that I'm prepared to say who opposes it. I think that there are people in industry, people who manufacture chemicals, for example, or products that are concerned. And we're very concerned in the beginning because we actually would have prohibited certain products if they were deemed, if they appeared on a list or they weren't able to come up with a safer alternative and they couldn't justify why not. That is all gone from the bill, and I think that I didn't want to be so prescriptive, and I do have room in here for industry to be consulted. That's in the amendment language in the report. We're asking for the department, the agency, to participate in consulting with industry and people who manufacture children's products with chemicals. I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't suppose the department or the agency love the bill, but they like it a lot better than when they used it.
Well, we can certainly ask them to speak.
You're right, that's fair
speak
enough.
For themselves.
That's fair enough.
Senator Shied, I'm just trying to make sure I understand it, but I guess the way it looks to me, basically, it sets up two lists. And then it requires a study. And I don't think it has any, maybe I'm missing something, but it doesn't really seem to do much more. Well, it says the state may participate in a interstate clearinghouse, but it doesn't do anything to these chemicals other than put them on a list.
Madam Chair.
Is that correct?
Madam Chair, to begin with, that's correct. It's not really a study so much as we're asking for the department to tell us how this will, how they can make this work.
Okay. I see
that. Those are the reports at the last.
Sure.
Section 7.
So I have a suggestion for your amendment. If you go back to 2.29, if we said deleted among others and inserted some or all, of the, how would that work? Because that would maybe get to Senator Rummel's question that they should at least consider some of these. Does that? I was going to say the department shall consider some or all. Well, wait a minute. We want them to consider the list, not the chemicals. So, or maybe this works. I don't know if this works. Or we could say some or all of the list. Lists. Whatever you think.
Okay.
So if we said the department shall consider some or all of the chemicals listed in the following sources, does that help? Give flexibility so they at least have to consider some of them, but they could also do all of them if they choose, but they can't do none of them.
Madam Chair, I wonder if it would, the department shall consider, as you said, some.
One or more.
Or all chemicals listed in the following sources. I don't know if you put among others there, because they might, I don't want the list to be
Among
totally
others.
Defining. There could be other sources.
In the following sources, among others, or including but not limited to, or something. Council, I got to stop taking your job here and let you do it. if you want to work on that for a minute, that I think we kind of know what we're trying to do here. And maybe we should let one person do it. I think that sounds like we should be able to make that work. Senator Rummel, would you like to move the A14 amendment and let's get that on the bill? Unless you had other changes you wanted
to
incorporate.
Why don't we do that and then I'll...
Just to keep things moving here.
Madam Chair, I'll move the amendment.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on the A14 amendment? Which has, we haven't incorporated any changes at this point because we're still working on those. All right. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. While Council's working on that change, do you have other
Madam Chair,
changes?
I do, and with my apology to Ms. Doyle, she did have a couple of lines in the First Amendment, and I do want to put them back in. So on page 1, line 12.
Page 1 of the bill? Or
yes, I'm sorry, of the bill, yes. Line 12. After the word purpose, insert and is a technically feasible and economically viable replacement. That's actually some language from the beginning, from the bill in its first draft. And I think that's, where it's premature to be talking about the alternatives in the sense that we're not asking for alternatives yet. But I think that I would like that. And did you get that?
Council, do you have that language?
I did not. I was working on
that. Madam Chair, I think on 1.12 after purpose, and is it technically feasible and an economically viable replacement?
And perhaps we want to say four, F-O-R.
Four.
Four.
Strike two.
Strike two.
T-O on line 12.
Okay. Senator Frederickson moves that oral amendment. Is there any discussion, any further discussion on that amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Scheid?
Madam Chair, just one more. On page 1, line 18. I would like you to delete everything after by. And insert the Department of Health or other federal or state agency. On line 19, delete organization. And that's
it?
Yes.
Okay, so just to restate that, on 1.18, delete everything after by and insert the Department of Health or other federal or state agency. And on line 19, delete organization. Is that? Is that it? What you?
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's it.
Meant? Okay, good. That's what you said. Great. All right.
Chair, Senator, I'll move the amendment.
Senator Fredrickson moves the oral amendment. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Scheid, is that? Okay. And then
okay.
Ms. Doyle?
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid, I would suggest, or I'm looking at this on line 2.29, to read, the department shall consider chemicals, including but not limited to the chemicals listed in the following sources for possible inclusion on the list of chemicals of high concern. So after chemicals, insert including but not limited to the chemicals.
That makes them look at all of them still.
Would that?
Yeah. They would still look at all the ones on the list.
Including, oh, that's yeah. True. Well,
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, I understand that, and I think that's probably a more artful way to say part of what I want to say. The concern I have is that I don't want them to have to consider every last chemical.
Mm-hmm. That's what I do.
Entity listed here.
Madam Chair, how about what you suggested previously was the department shall consider some or all of the chemicals listed in the following sources.
And then including but not limited to?
No, I think, Madam Chair, sources? On 2.30 after sources, if you just included and others, so the department shall consider some or all of the chemicals listed in the following sources and others for possible inclusion on the list of chemicals of high concern.
Does that work for you, sure. Senator Scheid?
No, I think captured it.
Okay. All right, let's state that, read that again. The department shall consider some or all chemicals.
Some or all of the chemicals listed in the following sources and others for possible inclusion. So it'd be on line 2.29, delete among others and insert some or all of the, and then on including, I think there's commas there to delete those, and then on 2.30 after sources, insert and others.
All right, does everyone have that? All right, that sounds like that'll work on that. Senator Fredrickson moves that oral amendment. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, Senator Scheid, perhaps we should see if there's anyone else who would like to testify, if anyone from the PCA would like to speak to this bill. Now is your chance. You do want to at least tell us that you have no opinion about it, for the record? Oh, the fiscal note. Yeah, we better look at the fiscal note. That's right. That's why we're here.
Madam Chair, members, Mike Sandusky, Director of the Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division at the Pollution Control Agency. It has been a long journey, for sure. I think the thing that's important to say is, number one, as I've testified before in front of this committee, this is an area of need. The federal framework of TSCA has failed. So states are taking initiative to address this general concern. So there is a need. Number two, this bill, if I followed all the discussion this evening correctly, I think could be described as a decent start, an appropriate start on addressing this. Maybe now is the time to mention that in the amendment, the second report that is now very inclusive, that's my agency's responsibility, seems like a fairly large task But it certainly does cover the ground in terms of what the state should and the policymakers should consider in terms of approaches for this area.
Thank you, Mr. Sandusky. And the fiscal note, I don't know if you've had a chance to look. Well, you obviously have looked at the amendment language.
Yes,
and so does this, as far as you can tell, does this still reflect the what you would expect it would cost the PCA?
Well, thanks for that question, Madam Chair. I appreciate that question. I think there might need to be amendments to the cost that we've attached to the report I just referenced, given the expansion of what it's intended to do now. But other than that, no, I don't see any large amendments to this fiscal note.
Okay, well, this, it looks like it's, and I'm just trying to read this quickly. I haven't read it before now, that the cost is for one FTE. Is this in the MPCA?
Yes. No, you're looking at probably the Department of Health, Madam Chair.
Well, I'm looking under MPCA staff. We'll go to an out-of-state meeting for the Interstate Chemical Clearinghouse, and then the MPCA report, and then it says under that, the annual cost of 1.0 FTE. And, yeah, this is PCA. This is on page 3. Because it says, I think, out-of-state travel to clearinghouse. Yeah. Mr. Mueller?
Madam Chair, I think the way they look at this fiscal note is you're looking at page 3. They're showing the cost of one FTE, but then underneath that they're showing they're actually only going to use 0.4 40% of an FTE.
Okay.
Correct.
For the first year, and now he's saying,
oh, I see.
By doing this extra little bit of language, or the new language in the amendment, I'm guessing on the first year they may need a little bit more money or more of an FTE to do that. So the $43,000 plus the outstate travel and all that, they have a total of $65,000 in the first year, and then $32,000. Roughly per year after that. I'm assuming the ongoing cost probably wouldn't change, but the first year cost maybe would go up a little bit.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Sandusky.
The 0.3 FTE just alluded to that was, it's divided between 0.3 of an FTE relative to the report writing responsibilities and 1/10 of an FTE regarding to the participation in the IC2 clearinghouse. Okay, let's get that clear. I think what I'm trying to say is that the expansion of the reporting requirements would entail a greater FTE contribution to get that responsibility completed.
I think we heard you on that. And it's, yeah, appreciate that. And, okay. And there's also a health department fiscal note, I think. Maybe Mr. Mueller, you can.
Madam Chair and members, on page 9 of the fiscal note, includes the cost of the Department of Health. And there again, they have a little bit more duties regarding this bill than PCA does. And they are assuming, I believe, FTE-wise, pretty much one FTE the first year, and after that, about a half a FTE to do the ongoing parts of the bill. So, and I'm assuming if this is the last stop of the committee, we would have to talk about if we fund both agencies in this area, we'd probably do something like what we've done with previous years with the biomonitoring, where we appropriate a certain amount and have it transferred to the Department of Health just to keep it all in one pot so that the bill doesn't have to go to two different divisions and the language to two different divisions in order to get it funded in two different divisions. So,
well, I'm guessing Senator Berglund will not be funding this.
I'm sure. I'm guessing you're probably right.
We seem to be on everyone's list today, you know? If you can't find any money, come to our committee.
Madam Chair, I came because you
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
you brought your own money.
Yeah, and then some, yeah. Yeah, we don't have it quite as bad as you do, Senator Bach. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, and Senator, Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, another thing, the fiscal note references general fund. I think this could be done within the environmental fund also. So which isn't, you know, that has its own limitations too, but it could definitely fund this bill, I think. Also, it doesn't necessarily have to come from the general fund just because the fiscal note says general fund costs.
Okay. So the staffing then would be, for health would be for a research scientist to evaluate the decisions about which chemicals to place on the list, and then to do that administrative function.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Shedd.
A couple of levels. I mean, I think it's important for legislators to have scientists working on this, you know, rather than us trying to make decisions. Then secondly, other states have started, state of Washington, state of California, and state of Maine, are different stages. We kind of, I think with the process or the framework we're establishing in this bill, get us up to speed with them rather quickly. And so I think that that's a real positive thing to be leading, I think, with those other states. And I think Mr. Sandusky said, I mean, this is needed. We need to do this. I understand the issue of having to hire people to do a report, and I did that second report by the agency is rather inclusive.
Well, I wonder if there are any research scientists that are being laid off at the Department of Health this year, perhaps, in need of a job. Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd like to compliment Senator Scheid for trying to do something in this area. I have a lot of respect and admiration for your legislative ability to do good things and think and so forth. The other side of it is I don't think I'll be supporting your bill. And I was going to ask Mr. Sandusky a question, but he left the table, and maybe he doesn't even need to return. But I was just wondering, from a standpoint of chemistry and public health and how all that works together, would you consider the Minnesota Council of Churches to be a good source of information on toxic chemistry?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But I mean, you know, you've got a lot of organizations here supporting this bill, but I don't see any other than the Minnesota Nurses Association that might have some background in toxic chemicals. And I know they probably don't do much research in that area either. That's not their bag for the most part, unless they're public health nurses. So, and my own general position on this, it just seems like in a time when we don't have enough money to do what we normally do, why would we add another program? And of course, I've given these speeches before about chemistry and how we have a lot of chemophobic citizens that are very worried about everything that in the environment. And we're so good at testing things now. We can test down to such a small, minuscule amount that these chemicals are really, you can find them almost anywhere, and our bodies are full of chemicals. I just feel like people are, they're chemophobic, and they've exaggerated, or they're in their mind that the degree of the size of the problem has been enlarged beyond what it really is. So I'm
not supporting the bill.
I'm not supporting the bill. That's right.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer an amendment. It's a phrasing amendment. It's on page 5. Line 8, Senator Scheid.
Excuse me.
Page 5, line 8. I move to delete participate and insert cooperate with other states. And on line 9, delete safer and delete in cooperation with other states. So that sentence would then read, the state may cooperate with other states in an interstate chemical clearinghouse regarding chemicals and consumer products.
Senator Shine?
Madam Chair, I think that's probably fine. This section is probably not vital to the bill. I want the department and the agencies to be able to get that information, so.
Senator Frederickson, could you maybe repeat that,
Madam Chair, on page 5, line 8, delete participate and insert cooperate with other states. And on line 9, delete safer and delete in cooperation with other states. So I'm just moving cooperation with other states up to the first line. Right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Schein.
Madam Chair, is Senator Frederickson leaving the Interstate Chemicals Clearinghouse language?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. We both participate and cooperate, and I just...
You deleted safer.
We already changed
deleted promote. Safer.
It's not in there.
Deleted safer.
Yeah. Promote chemicals and consumer products.
Well, it doesn't say promote anymore. It says regarding chemicals in consumer products
right.
in the last amendment. So.
Oh, that's right.
But do you want to take out safer?
That's
just
sure I did
regarding
include that.
Chemicals.
It's the chemicals.
Chemicals in consumer products. All right. Does everyone understand Senator Frederickson's amendment? And. Our staff has the language. All right. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Would anyone else like to speak on Senate File 225? And I take it there's no one here from the Department of Health. Oh, there is. Do you want to say anything? Okay. All right. Let the record show they are here.
Sure.
Senator Schein.
Madam Chair, the department and the PCA have been very helpful and have met with me several times and with others and with our counterparts in the other body and have been really helpful, I think, in helping us get this off on the right track.
18,000, they were.
After the first hearing, and so I really appreciate their help. I'm not trying to imply that they love this bill or support it wholeheartedly. You can see they do need some resources. Carry it out.
Senator Rummel?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to remind us that in January of 2008, the PCA did release a report on endocrine disruptors in our environment, and they reviewed the science, and they concluded at the end, and Mr. Sandusky can correct me if I've got it wrong here, that there's increasing evidence that these chemicals are accumulating in our environment and are problematic, I'll put it mildly, not only to people but to fish and wildlife. And it is much harder to clean them out of the environment than it is to keep them from getting in there in the first place. And so if this bill starts us on the first step toward being aware and moving us toward a mental framework where we think about how we make things so that we don't wind up having to clean them up later on. So that's one expense that down the road we can save. And the other expense, and we don't know how right now, I don't know if we ever will because of all the chemicals that Senator Dill referred to, we don't know how they affect our health. We know that some of them are dangerous, and they cost us tons of money in terms of health care. The amount of cancer, the amount of obesity, the amount of heart troubles, the children who are, we don't know where the autism is coming from. We don't know where the HDD, whatever it is coming from. So I think while there's, I don't think people are chemophobic. I do think that we are more sensitive to the things that we do to our environment, and we need to start paying attention, if only to learn, what helps and what doesn't. So I support this bill.
She doesn't.
Yeah, one for one.
Senator Rummel, would you care to move the bill?
I would be delighted to move the bill, Madam Chair.
All right.
Do you want
Senator, well, let me put the motion on the table. Senator Rummel moves that Senate File 225 as amended be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Senator Bach.
Oh, pass.
Any other discussion, comments? All right. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Senator Scheid. Okay, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Yes, Madam Chair, I bring Senate File 1760. Madam Chair, this is to this bill is a bill to allow for the renewable energy production incentive payments to be paid for a qualified hydroelectric facility on the Mississippi River just outside of downtown Minneapolis. And in your packet, members and Madam Chair, there's a little map. Looks like this. There's a picture as well of the facility on the reverse. And if you look at the map, if you look at the St. Anthony Lower Lock and Dam, off to the right there, just before the 35W bridge. The hydroelectric facility would go, if you see those little sections in that dam there, the hydroelectric facility would go into one of those little sections. The turbine would go in there, not the whole thing, just one of them. Madam Chair, members, this hydroelectric facility would create immediately, it's ready to go, ready to get under construction yet this year, would create 25 to 35 construction jobs, which would last about 2 years. It's about a $35 million job. It would be a 9.6 megawatt generator. It's using a modern turbine technology. And it has all of its licenses and permits. It's ready to go. It's got its FERC license, its interconnection agreement, so it can hook up to the distribution and transmission system. It has its power purchase agreement with Xcel. It has a construction permit from the Minneapolis Park Board, et cetera. So, Madam Chair and members, it's an exciting project, renewable portfolio standard, clean energy, no use of general funds, and it would take advantage of some of the existing resources that we have available in the REPI, which, of course, as folks probably are familiar, is some of the dollars that we set aside from the Renewable Development Fund, of which we appropriated somewhere north of $16 million per year. About $10.9 million of that is reserved for wind, and about 1.5 is reserved for other qualified renewable energy projects, specifically hydroelectric and on-farm biogas. With that, I have Melissa Parker here, who represents Brookfield, which is the independent power producer who's going to be building this project.
All right, welcome to the committee, Ms. Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Melissa Parker, and I represent Brookfield Renewable Power. I don't know if I have a lot to add about the project. I would say that this is the first time. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that Brookfield Renewable Power currently does have a hydroelectric facility in the Twin Cities. They are the owners and operators of what we know as the Ford plant. This new facility will use Hydromax turbines dropped into the existing dam structure. It's the first time that this technology has been used in the United States. Again, these jobs are ready to go. We should start construction in May, and the construction period will last until October of 2010. And if members look in their packets, they'll see a couple of letters of support, one from the North Central States Carpenters Union from Kyle Macarios, and also the Operating Engineers International Union, the Local 49ers. The bill before the committee, in 2008, the legislature adjusted the payment period for a qualified hydroelectric facility from 2018 to 2021 under Section 216C, which defines that eligibility for the REPI payments. In the bill before the committee, Section 1 makes the correlating change under 116C.77 and directs the allocation from the production incentives out of the Renewable Development Fund for wind and other qualified projects, including hydro. It also offers a little cleanup language suggested in working with the Department of Commerce to specify hydroelectric facilities as other qualified projects in both of those sections of statute. And because there is some concern that the REPI fund could fall a little bit short in making its committed payments in the calendar year of 2010, the bill directs the RDF to provide a bridge of up to $500,000 in that calendar year if there is insufficient funds to fully pay eligible claims during that year. And again, that language was suggested working with the Department of Commerce. I'd be happy to take any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. We're going to have to go through what the financial implications of this are a little more carefully, because it's really quite confusing to me. And I don't know if Mr. Glenn wants to come on up now and try to give us, I know you've been trying to collect some information on this today. Maybe we should let you speak and then we can try to make sure we understand and ask questions. Anything? Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, I'm Bill Glenn, the Director of the Office of Energy Security and a Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. I guess I'd prefer if you asked me questions,
okay,
because I'm not.
I can ask a question.
Or you or some other member ask me questions, because I have lots of information here, and I'm not quite sure I can put it all into narrative form at this point.
But you don't want me to ask, what does all this mean? I won't do that. Yeah. We'll try to be a little more specific. I'll let Senator Kubley kick us off here.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I wanted to offer an oral amendment that would include solar in this as well. Seems to me solar is coming into its own, but if you want to deal with the money question first, we can do that too.
All right. Senator Kubley, I think it would be wise of us to figure out exactly what this would do in terms of existing obligations under the REPI and the RDF and new obligations that would be incurred by this bill. And I'm really not clear on that. So, members, just to remind all of us, we haven't really heard much about this REPI for a number of years because it hasn't been reauthorized. So the Renewable Energy Production Incentive was a penny and a half incentive per kilowatt hour that it started with small wind projects in the 90s. I think we first authorized it and then authorized $10 million out of the Renewable Development Fund, I think, to continue those payments at some point. That was probably 2001. And that, if you signed up for it, you signed up for 10 years' worth of payments. Okay, that's it. That's all I know. So the part about, what the first question is, I know there were some changes made where we had to prorate the amount that was available for some wind projects. And I'm not sure if I guess the question is, how many wind projects are there still online, you know, in line for these payments? And are we doing anything to affect those who are already in the program with this language? That would be the first question. Mr. Glenn?
Madam Chair, I would prefer to take them one at a time.
Sure.
So, my understanding, and actually I think this part is fairly clear in the statute, that there's $10.9 million from the Renewable Development Fund dedicated toward these payments. And, again, it's pretty clear that $9.4 million of that is dedicated toward the wind projects, the up to 200 megawatts of wind. So I believe your characterization of a moment ago is correct. There are wind projects getting a cent and a half incentive, and there are wind projects that are only getting a 1 cent incentive. And the $9.4 million, again, it's a cent and a half. It's a per kilowatt hour thing. So some of it depends on how much wind energy is produced. So the dollar amounts for the wind part vary a little bit from year to year from what I can gather by looking through all my pieces of paper here. And so what happens is the one and a half, depending on how much, in the way it's been working, depending on how much wind power is produced, the 1 cent people sometimes get some top up payments that they're the ones being prorated right now, and every year there's a few hundred thousand, give or take, that they're able to get a little bit more, but.
I'm sorry, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
So, okay, that's out of the 9.4 million?
Madam Chair, out of the 9.4 million. So you have two buckets, and there's a $9.4 million wind bucket, and that, you know, for the most part, I would say is fully subscribed, in that $9.4 million gets distributed every year, and some projects get more than others. And so there is some prorating going on with
within that.
So, now,
okay,
Madam
go ahead.
Chair,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The 1.5 million. Now, I could answer this question one of two ways. One way is the 1.5 million is not being fully subscribed. That, and I did get information on that. So there are. There's one biogas project and two hydro projects that receive between the three projects about $300,000 roughly annual payments. So of the 1.5 million, only about 300,000 per year is being used right now for projects that are eligible for that bucket. So in some sense, there's 1.2 million that's not being spoken for in terms of those projects, but I did want to hasten to add that the way this is set up now, the whatever isn't used in that program reverts to monies that the Renewable Development Fund Board then goes and issues through competitive grants to others. So it is a zero-sum game in that there's the pie is so big, and we have set aside amounts up to dollar amounts for these renewable energy payments, but all monies are being distributed in some manner over time.
Okay, thank you. And so, okay, so looking at the bill, why, Senator Dibble, do you make the changes? Why do you extend 2018 to 2021 on 1.10?
I'm sure that conforms actually to a change that had already been made in another part of statute in 216C, where the eligible projects are specifically enumerated. And so that just is a conforming change to something we had already done last year.
Senator Kubley?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and Senator Dibble, you know, I'd ask the same question of striking the language on lines 1.13 and 1.14 and 5.
Madam Chair, the up to 200 megawatts, that also is kind of a conforming change. That came forward at the request of the department because the truth is we're paying for something like 224 megawatts of wind-generated electricity. 1.14 and 1.15... I think is another conforming amendment. I think Laws 2005, Chapter 40 is another listing of qualified projects for the REPI.
Okay. Then, Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I guess, you know, the stricken language on 1.18 and 1.19, it seems to me that, you know, if that language were left in place, it might cover solar.
Oh, you're talking about 118 to 119, Senator Kubley?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, that's the next question. Why? Okay. It looks like under the current law, hydroelectric facilities are already eligible under other renewables, correct? So why
exactly.
do you want to make this change?
It's just another clarifying cleanup. You know, other. This is, again, you know, we drafted this, with advice from the department. That was a piece that came from the department. And hydroelectric facilities, again, is just a clarifying, you know, to conform to 216C.41, where the eligible projects are listed. And the only eligible projects that have been listed are these on-farm biogas and these hydro projects.
So even though
under
it says...
Under other renewable.
Well, it says, or for production incentives for other renewables to provide it in the same manner as under. So are you, so you're saying that it doesn't cover other renewables under current law? That's your reading of the statute, or it does cover? Mr. Glahn, do you have an opinion on that?
Well, Madam Chair, insofar as we are currently providing incentives to hydro projects, I guess I would agree with the idea that anything that is in 216C41 would be eligible for it.
But and is anything else like solar that is another type of renewable eligible also?
Madam Chair, I'd have to look at the book. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, that's, we'll have to figure that out. Do you have an Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, it's qualified hydroelectric facility. If you look at the definitions of what's included, and then you've got the qualified wind energy conversion facility, qualified on-farm biogas recovery facility, and anaerobic digester system are the defined terms in that section of law. And it doesn't have an incentive payment, though, for that last one. It looks like it's only for qualified hydroelectric, qualified wind energy, qualified on-farm biogas, and gas generated from a qualified on-farm biogas. But it looks like those are the only things that are eligible for payment under this right now.
Well, I guess the question I would have is the language that Senator Kubley referenced, where it says production incentives for other renewables to be provided in the same manner does not mean the same thing as to be only those things on the list. So I think you could interpret this to say that all kinds of renewables are potentially eligible. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of up to us what we meant. I don't know what we meant. But it would certainly exclude other forms of renewables if we accepted your amendment here.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll also point out that as and this came up in the last committee discussion, and so this is again something that the he would need to struggle with, and that is as the wind payments start falling off, the only eligible, and if we don't reopen a process, to qualify new projects, the only kinds of projects that would be eligible for the 10, the 9.4 would be just hydro and on-farm biogas. I don't think that there would be enough projects in Minnesota to. So then all those dollars would revert to the RDF. So it's a policy decision that the committee would need to make for itself. So that's all a long-winded way of saying I have no investment or ownership over restricting these funds to any particular purpose.
So
this is something
Dibble,
that we did in conjunction with the department, and this was cleanup as they presented.
Tell us exactly what you want for this project. That this bill does so much beyond what you want for this project,
yes,
I think. And I don't, I'm trying to separate out what you need to get
yes,
this
that,
project done.
That would
done.
Be an accurate statement. So.
Okay. What do you need to get this project done?
Well, we just need to make sure that this particular hydroelectric facility qualifies for its payments, its REPI payments for
full 10-year period.
For 10 years.
That's right.
Okay. And under current law, or if you added hydroelectric facilities, I think under current law they're already eligible.
Yes.
And only 300,000 of that money is even spoken for. So
The 1.5 million.
Of the 1.5. So how much money in REPI payments would this project claim per year? What's your projection?
I think $400,000 to $500,000.
Oh, just for this project. Okay. Per year.
Yeah.
Okay, but there's still plenty. There'd still be leftover money out of that 1.5 million to cover that.
Yes, Madam Chair. And additionally, just to talk about the entire REPI, as wind projects, I think wind projects started coming to the REPI in 2001. And so the
in the RDF. There was previous to that a general fund appropriation.
Right, right, from the RDF. And so wind is going to start falling out very quickly.
Okay.
Over the course of the next few years, and there's going to be a lot of money in the REPI. And so we don't need to solve that problem today, but that's something that the committee should be aware of, that there's an opportunity here.
An opportunity for what? I mean, I'm not sure where you're steering that money. I'm not. I haven't even gotten to the second the paragraph C and D yet to really understand you're trying to propose here in this language. And I understand some of it came from someone who's not here tonight. So
I'm not steering that money anywhere.
Well, what does your bill? Where does your bill steer it? I think this bill says that if the money's not all needed for wind, it'll go to biogas and hydroelectric facilities. But hydroelectric and biogas facilities aren't even using up the small amount that they have set aside. So why would we do that?
We don't need to do that.
Okay. All right. That's paragraph C, and I think I agree with you. We don't need to do that. And then again, and then why would we need to do paragraph D? That again says if there's not enough money, then we're going to give you more money. Is there any reason to do that?
No.
Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, I think your analysis is correct. I don't see any reason to do that unless they use up the full $1.5 million. That would be the only reason.
I mean, are there other projects in the wings that you're going to bring forward that you're hoping would be eligible? Is there sort of a long-term
slightly more familiar with
hydro plan
the need
here?
For paragraph D.
Right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, in the conversations that we had with the Department of Commerce, my understanding is there may be some other projects, not projects that we're associated with, but other projects that potentially are coming online. And there were some concerns that although only $300,000 of that fund is currently being allocated, that there may be some additional payments coming online. And so the bridge fund for 2010 was to just ensure that every qualified project under other receive its full payments for that calendar year. I don't know if the Department of Commerce can speak to what's in the works.
Well, I guess it's a little hard to free up all this money for a hypothetical project we have no information about. Mr. Glahn, is it Mr. DeFebri who's out of town is the one who knows this? Or do you know if there's someone else who'd be available in the next day or two who might?
Madam Chair, Mr. DeFebri is the expert on this, and his assistant, Ms. Bysak, they're both at the same federal stimulus conference, learning how to do the federal stimulus thing right. But again, I know we're going to be convening again tomorrow. Not that I'm trying to jump to the solution here, but if you have questions, I can go. I talked to Mr. DeFebri twice today on this subject. I didn't anticipate the question about projects in waiting in the wings. So I was very focused on where the money is going today. So I can certainly contact him again and get answers to those questions. But the only thing I can say is that was my understanding that other projects could show up. It could show up tomorrow. And even though only $300,000 of the $1.5 million is being used today, that situation could change tomorrow. But I don't – obviously he had something specific in mind when he came up with this. I'm not privy to that, but I can certainly contact him between now and when the committee reconvenes tomorrow.
Actually, we probably aren't meeting tomorrow, but we will be meeting Thursday.
Oh, my apologies,
we'll be,
Madam Chair.
No, Thursday. That's all right. It is on the schedule, perhaps. But the we're going to be passing the bill on Thursday, so we kind of have to have this figured out by then. Honestly, I'm not sure why you even need a bill. I mean, to accomplish, Senator Dibble and Ms. Parker, what you're trying to accomplish.
There is one point, Madam Chair, that is very important to the project, and that is when the legislature made the change in the eligibility period last year in 2008 to move the eligibility for REPI payments from 2018 to 2021. The correlating statute, as we're seeing in 116, that makes the actual payments, right, should have been changed at the same time and was not done. And so that change from 2018 to 2021 that you see there in Section 1 is essential to the project.
So your project, when would it start requesting payments to actually take effect?
Right. With the jobs starting this next month, April and May, period of 18 to 24 months for construction, and the goal is to have this online October of 2010.
Okay, so you would want 10 years after that, obviously, for
That's correct, to have full eligibility. Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And that conforms, Madam Chair, to 216C41, like I mentioned earlier, which is where the qualifying projects are enumerated.
I'm sorry, Senator Dibble.
Oh, I was just saying that, and that conforms to the change that was made last year in 216.41.
That was
qualifying projects are enumerated.
Just for
I don't know why these two are so disconnected from each other. You got 116, you got 216.
Yeah,
that's a lot to keep
this
track
is
of.
So confusing. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So would we be able to move this on if we deleted everything after from 1.2 on and then restored that thing that we just deleted on 18 and 1.18 and 1.19? I'm just talking to staff here.
You're trying to move keep us moving here, and yeah. I appreciate that. I'm Madam
Chair, knowing that we're going to have to work on this and that we'll be revisiting it on Thursday, but that we need to move it out of here.
Other comments? Senator Frederickson?
Well, Madam Chair, listening to this, it seems to me like all we really need is a bill through line 1.15, just to extend that date.
So if we just did paragraph A, is that what you were saying, Senator Saxon?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I was looking for that hydroelectric facilities, but I don't know if that's, but, you know, whatever.
Just to clarify that they're included, so that would be on 1.17, but I'm not sure that the deletion is necessary.
Yeah.
You can just leave
on 18 to 19.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'd still like to see something in there for solar and maybe even geothermal, but you know, I mean, if we're restoring the stricken language, then I don't know. I'm confused now, wondering what's necessary. I mean, if we need to add hydroelectric facilities, then shouldn't we add the other pieces as well if we're going to amend it?
It's okay to.
I don't even know why what's in 116C and what's in 216C. So I well, you help us, Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, the Renewable Development Fund is in 116C. That's in 1994. That's when you created the Renewable Development Fund. But the programs that are run by the Department of Commerce are in 216C. So that's why you have
the REPI.
Yes.
It's in 216C.
So you've got this cross.
Okay. And so we really do need to make them conform with each other.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, the date on 1.10, the date that was changed last year was for the hydroelectric facility. That was extended to 2021, and so that's why they want the conforming amendment there, because otherwise this would go away in 2018, and yet that would still say that they're eligible for payment through 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, if you wouldn't mind, I think if you just basically only had through 1.17, or actually through 1.19, but reinstate the stricken language on 1.18 and 1.19. And then you may want to adopt Section 2 also, mm-hmm. just to clarify the hydroelectric facilities for the renewable development account. I think you would, and then if you just deleted the new language, we reinstate the stricken language on 1.18 and 1.19, and then just delete the new language on 1.20 through 1.2. I think you'll have what Senator Dibble needs.
Oh, now I'm looking at Section 2, which is the stricken. What? that refers back to the stricken language that you read this before. But I guess is that what we're striking here? No. This is subdivision 5A.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, if you're confused, I'm lost. Let's be sure we know what we're doing.
Yes, that's good advice. We're getting.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dill.
Mr. Knopf is almost always right. I would like to move what he said.
said.
Almost. <yeah. laughs> It just seemed that.
So, Madam Chair, if I understand.
Senator Dibble.
So, Mr. Knopf proposes that. Basically, just proposes that we restore the stricken language on 1.18 and 1.19, that we delete paragraphs C and D, and that I guess and E and F, because that's just existing language, and that we keep section 2. That would definitely accomplish what we need to accomplish. Now, I don't know if we want to get back to Senator Kubley's suggestion that we stick solar and geothermal in there, which I'm fine with too.
Well, that's the last piece that I'm a little confused about, which is going back to that stricken language on 118 and 119.
As I understand, Madam Chair, that's just, I think that again, was an agency cleanup request. And I think it was just, I think they viewed it as redundant language.
Did you, Mr. Knopf, you read that before, but could you just, what does it say again in 216C.41?
Well, Madam Chair, those are the programs that we've been talking about, the wind energy conversion systems, the qualified wind energy conversion systems, the qualified hydroelectric facility, and the qualified on-farm biogas recovery facility. And then there's also an anaerobic digester system that was put in, but I don't think that's ever really gone anywhere. But their solar is not included in that section.
I think it's pretty clear that even though it says other renewables, if we reinsert this language, solar and geothermal still will not be authorized. That's what I'm getting, do you agree?
Madam Chair, I agree. The question is it's kind of vague, and then if you could kind of show that I'm not sure what the showing you would do, and that's probably why the department doesn't want that language in there anymore.
So perhaps, Senator Kubley, if you wanted to work on that, we would need some more specific language, and we'd also need to figure out where you want to take that from. If you'd want to make it eligible for out of that 1.5 million that was not wind.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, if Senator Dibble is accurate, and I suspect he is, I'd just soon put it in both sections. That would make it eligible as wind energy goes offline to make solar and geothermal eligible, so there would be more possibility of getting some dollars in those areas. You know, so to put it in both sections would seem to me to be the best option.
Maybe I'll ask Mr. Glahn another question. When, and maybe you already said this, I apologize if you did, when are most of the wind REPI payment 10-year periods going to expire?
Madam Chair, I do not have an aging to that, and that was something that I just wasn't able to pull together in the hours interim. But again, I think I can get that for you by Thursday or by tomorrow. By tomorrow, and I can have it distributed to your committee and distribute it to your committee staff and have it distributed to the committee.
Because. But, well, the question is, I mean, I think if we authorize the REPI in 2001, then presumably most of the wind projects will expire pretty soon. But I don't know that for a fact. And if that is the case, I mean, I should point out that the first time we did a REPI with general fund dollars, all the money was gone in 6 months. The second time we did it, it was all gone in 6 weeks. It was an extremely popular program. And so, Senator Kubley, I'm really interested in doing what you're proposing. If the wind payments are getting close to expiration, we should think about reauthorizing them. But we should also think about whether we need to reauthorize another round for wind as well. Wind, solar, whatever. I mean, I think we might need to look at the bigger picture to decide, because that would be a big commitment of a lot of money for 10 years' time, and we should be, you know, intentional about what we would include in that. Would you be willing, Senator Kubley, to wait until we get that information from Mr. Glahn tomorrow, and then we could put some language together? Because if it is something that's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years, it does make sense to get that in the bill now. If it's not going to happen for 10 more years, then we would do something differently, and we'd want to just put that into that $1.5 million, I think. Does that make sense?
All right. Well, let's give it a shot.
Okay. Well, I think then what I'm proposing is, that we sort of lay the solar geothermal issue over till we get some more information, and then we'll bring some language back to Senator Kubley for your, then we'll put something in the bill. We'll propose something in our bill when we come back on, you know, Wednesday or Thursday. And so I'm not sure that we really need to reinstate that stricken language. I guess I'm not sure that it does any harm to get rid of that language. But we can save that for tomorrow. Why don't we just go with what we have in front of us now, which is subdivision 2, paragraph B, and then if we want to reinstate the stricken language, we can do that for now until we have more information.
Paragraph A.
A and B.
Paragraphs A and B.
Oh, I'm sorry. When I said subdivision 2, that's what I meant. Paragraphs A and B, except reinstate the stricken language in B. And then section 2, right? That's what we were talking about. And so if we could move forward on that, and then we will make a decision about solar and geothermal and bring something back to the committee on that. Does that make sense?
Well, Madam Chair, I said you were lost, but now I think you're found.
I think we are found. I hope so. Senator Sackett.
So, Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 1760 is amended be
perhaps we should
we
vote
didn't
on that
vote
amendment.
On the amendment.
Do you want to move that amendment first? Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
Okay. So Senator Saxhog moves that amendment as just described by several of us. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. And then Senator Saxhog.
Senate File 1760 is meant to be passed on and laid over for possible inclusion in the
omnibus
bill.
All right. Senator Dibble, does that work for you?
Sounds great.
Excellent. All right. And Mr. Glahn, we'll look forward to hearing more from you tomorrow, and we'll try to get this figured out. Mr. Glahn?
Madam Chair, if I could just clarify then. So it's the aging of the wind projects, when they start hitting that 10-year limit, and some sense of how much money would be freed up at what point in time.
Yes.
Are you still interested in hearing about whatever projects we may be aware of waiting in the wings to take up this money?
For
the 1.5. That could tap into that 1.5.
Because my understanding is there's no more eligible for the wind piece.
That's correct, yeah.
And then?
Wind's deadline was 2008.
Right. So that window is passed. And then, what the thought was on why we needed more money for 2010 this other language that we suggest to be included. I'll try to track down what the reasoning was behind all that.
Great. And while you're at it, maybe just ask if you've interpreted this to the renewable projects to be limited to those listed.
Okay.
Which I believe
yes,
the
right.
language
I
says,
down
but
too.
Solar and geothermal.
What are other renewables eligible? I just don't know. Beyond those that were listed in that 216C41,
yes.
The two kinds of biogas and then the hydro and wind.
Yes.
Anything
Very
beyond
good.
That?
That should be plenty of information.
And I'll get it to you tomorrow.
Thank you so much. On Senator Saxhog's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Good work, committee. That was a team effort.
So are we done?
No, I have a bill.
Oh.
You have to wait. Yes. I have a bill that I can do really fast. So, Tom, would you? Thank you.
Just about got out of here quick.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Anderson, Senate File 1919.
Is a recommendation from the Green Jobs Task Force, and this is a proposal for it originally started out as a concept called the Green Enterprise Authority. In the Economic Development and Jobs Committee, what's it called, Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee, we did narrow this down somewhat to a less ambitious proposal given the budget constraints that we're under and the complications of doing interagency changes. But the idea of it in concept was and still is to try to have one place, kind of a one-stop shop for green businesses to go where they could figure out what kinds of assistance there is from different state programs and what permits are needed and what obstacles they might face and find a way to try to facilitate the development of these industries in Minnesota and do it in a way that is business-friendly and jobs-friendly. And we originally envisioned this as taking staff from all these different state agencies that might have some overlap, but instead now what we're proposing, the more modest version, takes us an appropriation, which is the leftover funds from the Green Jobs Task Force. There's a small amount of money left there to fund some staff time in the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And that would mostly be, it would be someone whose job it would be to market Minnesota as a place for green business to come and to welcome them and try to figure out strategies to attract green businesses, but also to do that coordination effort with other state agencies that have connection to the areas that are integrated into green industries, like the PCA, the DNR, Department of Ag, Transportation, and Commerce through the energy, lots of energy security. And so basically the bill appropriates the money to DEED, and sets up this program to advise, promote, market, coordinate, and mandate state agency collaboration on green enterprise and green economy projects. And it's based on the definition that we already put in law of green economy types of projects based on Minnesota's energy, environment, and biofuels policies that have been passed into law over the last few years. So that's basically the bill. We ask the Department of the Deed to seek out and work with someone from the business community to try to have a presence at trade shows and trade missions to try to get some private contribution to this activity as well. In fact, in Senator Metzen's committee, Senator Bonoff said, well, maybe legislators would be good participants in that kind of activity too, and it makes sense to make use of legislative talents and as many private sector talents as possible. I do have an amendment I'd like to offer, which is the A2 amendment. This was requested by Deed, and it just allows the commissioner of economic development to accept gifts, contributions, and in-kind services for the purposes of this section, and that is specifically intended to relate to trade shows and other enterprises like that where they get contributions from interested businesses to sponsor them. So this allows that money exchange to occur to accept those private donations.
Senator Anderson moves the A2 amendment. Are there any questions of the committee?
Before you do that, it doesn't say that the money is appropriated for that purpose. I think that when it says any funds received must be placed in the special revenue account, and I think you should say and are appropriated for the purposes of this section. So after account, just say and are appropriated.
Would that be okay? Okay, that's a friendly amendment by the author. Okay. And other questions on the A2 amendment?
You can run this by John Marty, see if he allows it.
Getting pretty witty here in the late hours. Any other questions, comments? Okay, on the A2 amendment as amended, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
And, Mr. Chair, I would point out that the bill as written appropriates $100,000, and we're in the process of trying to determine how much money there actually is. I think it's a little less than that, so we'll have to just narrow that down by the time we put this in our budget bill. And also, Senator Tomasoni will be hearing this bill in his division tomorrow. But he understands that we intend to pay for it, and so that hopefully he'll be supportive of doing it with the money coming from our division.
Senator Bach.
Well, that was my question, Mr. Chairman, is this is 116J. Shouldn't this be in Senator Tomasoni's bill?
It could be, Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, but I think he's supportive of us putting it in our bill, and we talked about this. He's on Senator Metzen's committee and decided to send it here because we're appropriating the money, but we wanted to make sure that he reviewed it and supported it, and so I think he's just asked us to review it tomorrow rather than actually have the bill in his division, but we can discuss that with Senator Tomasoni. So I guess I'd like to move to lay this on the table for possible inclusion, but as we have learned this session, we can do that in multiple divisions at the same time. So we can certainly have that discussion in Senator Tomasoni's committee tomorrow.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments? Any additional?
Mr. Glahn, I guess, would like to say something.
Mr. Glahn, come forward, please. You got Mr. Glahn, you have to identify yourself again, as you know.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I am Bill Glahn, the Director of the Office of Energy Security and a Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. And I appreciate Senator Anderson's invitation for me to speak on this. And I appreciate the late hour, too, so I'll try not to repeat the talk I gave in the last committee on this bill. But I do want to summarize. We are fully supportive of the concept behind the bill. We think this is an important activity. In fact, it's an activity in which we are engaged in today. This is what I'll cut out. We have an effort, an interagency effort under the acronym CECON, the Clean Energy Commercial Opportunities Network. My predecessor very enamored of naming conventions like that, where I have a staff person who reports to me, but who is funded by many of the same agencies and others that are listed in this bill to do just what this bill does. She's a state employee and pulls together interagency effort to meet companies who are interested in bringing green jobs to Minnesota, introducing the state to these companies. And so from my standpoint, much of the activities that are described in this bill are already being done through under the aegis of the CECON effort, which is, again, an interagency effort. Without going into all the details of it, I did want to just highlight a few of the specific concerns I have with the language in the bill. And I'll leave it at that. Just pointing out that right now this is being coordinated through the Office of Energy Security, part of the Department of Commerce, rather than DEED, although DEED, as Mr. Isaacson attests to, is an active participant in the effort. As in the language in 1.11 through 1.13, I'm not sure that's how I would phrase the objective of at least our effort that we're, it's what I said before, introducing the state to potential employers in the sector, coordinating efforts across the state government, trying to be the one-stop shop for this. And again, I don't know, I don't think the PCA is here any longer, but not speaking for them, but I can imagine from prior conversations I've had with them on other subjects that they would be concerned with anything that would be shown as expediting the permitting process ahead of what other processes they have in place. That's not to say that we don't help applicants and potential employers navigate the thicket of all the agency work that needs to be done in order to be up and running. I, again, appreciate all the work that the Senator and others have put into making the changes from the original bill, which was very prescriptive as to how many employees would be assigned from each agency, and that was a problem we had with the bill. I guess that's an improvement, but I'm concerned with the language about assigning sufficient employees. Who gets to decide how many is sufficient and from where? Mm-hmm. And then my third and final comment with the specific language is, again, as I repeat over and over, I'm not burdened by a legal education. But reading the words, appointing a person to represent the state, I know the appointments process is a very formal process, and representing the state sounds like a very heavy set of responsibilities. And I would need to
have people look at this language to see if that, does that create any liability problems for the state or any policy problems when having somebody who is not an elected or appointed official speaking, an employee or an elected official speaking on behalf of the state. So we have some specific problems, or we have some specific concerns with the language that's in the revised bill. But again, I appreciate the offers that were made in the last committee. It was great to hear the senators volunteering to help in this effort. And I am certain we will employ some of that talent to help sell our state to others. And look forward to working with Senator Anderson and others to improve the concept that she's outlined here today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Other questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, I guess Senator Anderson. Just mention that in the process of the, you know, we had a number of hearings around the state with the Green Jobs Task Force and had several hundred people and different, including a number of companies and entrepreneurs, come and talk to us about their the barriers that they were facing in trying to set up green businesses. And so this was a recurring theme that we heard, that it's just really hard to navigate the maze of bureaucracies and state agencies and to know where to go and to know who to call. And to and shouldn't we as a state, if we really have a policy of promoting green business because it is environmentally friendly, shouldn't we make it easier for them to set up shop, given that they don't have, you know, harmful, you know, there's no, there's, there should be less regulatory problems with a business that's a green business, you would think, and that our state has been losing ground to other states in terms of marketing those opportunities. So that's what we're trying to get at, and you know, we certainly intend to work with our agencies to try to achieve that goal, but that's the intention that we're trying to get at here. I think we can always do better.
Say amen. That's good. So any other questions or comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I guess I would move that Senate File 1919, as amended, be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
On the motion. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? On the, it's on the table, and will be considered for the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair, second. Before you adjourn the meeting, I just want to announce we're not intending to have a committee meeting tomorrow. I think there's probably one on your schedule, and we're trying to set up meetings with committee members to talk about where we're at on the budget bill. So stay tuned on that tomorrow. And save that time. We'll be working.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.
Okay, so...